You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Saturday evening, November the 9th, if the audio clarity is a little bit different than normal, it's because I am connected to the studio via telephone tonight. From Nashville, Tennessee, where I have just participated in the Council of Conservative Citizens National Board of Directors meeting here in Nashville with the great folks, the members of the council who have been supporting and working in cooperation and in partnership with our show since very nearly day one. I think 2005 we began our partnership with the council, and both organizations certainly better as a result of that relationship. Keith Alexander could not be with me here tonight in Nashville, but he too has joined us via telephone tonight. We'll be back in the studio and at full strength next Saturday. Tonight was going to be a patchwork show, folks. Hope you enjoy it. It's going to be raw and uncensored as always. And over telephone, we are mailing this in, I guess you could say. Keith, how are you tonight down there in Memphis?
Doing great. Tell everybody at the Council of Conservative Citizens that I wish that I could be there, but had prior commitments that I had to honor. But let me say this. You're absolutely right. The Council of Conservative Citizens has been a key supporter of the Political Cesspool radio show from the beginning. In fact, I first learned of the existence of the Political Cesspool show by reading the Citizens Informer, the quarterly newspaper put out by the council. And that piqued my interest. I tuned in, saw what a great show it was, and decided I wanted to be part of it. And it's all, I don't know that connection would ever have been made but for the Council of Conservative Citizens.
Now, how about that, folks? I mean, I want you to think about that for a minute as we get this show kicked off. And by the way, it's great to have Keith back. He hardly ever misses. He's in 50 out of the 52 weeks of the year in his capacity as co-host. It just so happens that the 2 weeks he's missed have been 2 out of the last 3 because of different conflicts and family obligations. But that being said, just think about the ramifications of that, that Keith finds us as a result of reading the council newspaper, and then Keith is there with us in Memphis, was able to tune into the show via the AM affiliates we have there. If nothing else ever came as a result of the relationship of the Political Cesspool and the Council of Conservative Citizens, that they delivered to us, Keith Alexander, is worth more than its weight in gold. And think of the impact Keith has had on this show and on so many people who have tuned in since he became a co-host. The council is, to thank for that in many ways. And, of course, that's hardly the only contribution they've made. We have met so many great people through our partnership with the council, like Tom Dover and Gordon Baum. Well, I mean, to list them would do a disservice because there is so many you couldn't possibly name them all. But a lot of them are up here today, Keith. This isn't the national conference for the council that takes place each summer. That's where we do the live remote broadcast with the rowdy audience. And, you know, people have heard those before, some of our very favorite shows, in fact. This is a business meeting, so we're not doing the live setup tonight. It's more of a nuts and bolts type of thing, a smaller crowd, because, it's, like I said, it's just all work. But a lot of supporters up here of the show. We're greeting and meeting with them all day today. People like Brian in Arkansas, who, God bless him. I mean, this guy contributes every time we send out a fundraiser, had the chance to spend some time with him in the lounge last night. We went out to lunch today, and just so many great people. Earl Holt out of St. Louis, who was elected president of the council, replacing the retiring Tom Dover, who I just mentioned, and there's so many others that have been up here, friends and family. They truly are, and they're a great representation of our audience as a whole, Keith, as you know, just great salt of the earth, hardworking, taxpaying, God-fearing conservatives. Of course, the CFCC has been slimed with many of the same untruths as our radio show, which is another reason I love them so much, is because they've gone out there explicitly conservative, paleo-conservative, and pro-white in their outreach, and they have scars to share, and we share them with the council, and together we have helped one another continue to grow over the course of the last 9 years. I had a chance to give a talk today about some of the recent accomplishments that the show has garnered. And, you know, as always, we were one of the toasts of the meeting. And it's just great to have good people and good friends. And I'm not going to keep droning on about that, but a lot of them are up here in Nashville tonight.
Well, I can say this. Council of Conservative Citizens is the successor organization, in spirit at least, to the old White Citizens Council. And that group has been in the fight since before 1954. Basically, 1954 and the Brown decision really ramped it up. And they did work that, quite frankly, there's no telling what the state of the education and of, let's say, white Southerners would be were it not for the yeoman efforts of the White Citizens Council back in the day and setting up what were called council schools. Those were private, non-exclusive schools with very low-cost education to protect kids from the dangers of the liberal, unprecedented liberal takeover by the federal government of local public education through the Brown decision. They put their money where their mouth was. This is where, you know, many of the people that have served on the board through the years were involved in that struggle. We have many people on the board now that were instrumental in the founding of schools like that. And if that were the only thing that the council was associated with, I would have to say that they were worth their weight in gold. But they've done so many other things. They've been in the forefront of fighting liberalism, or what goes under the banner of liberalism today. And they've been right as rain throughout their history. And anybody that sees, like we do, that liberalism is the modern face of evil would have to take their hat off to the Council of Conservative Citizens. I think they're absolutely indispensable group, and I wish them all the success in the world in the future, and they have a glorious past.
They do, and of course we're not going to be talking about that the whole program, but here in this opening segment where we typically go to the mail, the listener emails, and I had several that had come in for Keith and wanted to wait to share them until tonight when Keith was back on the show. But, of course, the hotel computer couldn't download a Microsoft Word document, so we'll have to stave that off until next week, rather opening the show, talking about where I am tonight and why I'm here. And, of course, people would say, oh, my God, the White Citizens Council was once called for that? Oh, well, if you have horror about that, do you have horror about the NAACP? And I think White Citizens Council was a little bit of a misnomer. I think it was technically called the Citizens Council. At least that's my understanding. But it was you know, obviously primarily an organization to defend the interests of European Americans. And, you know,
and see, that's the key thing, James. James, that's the key thing. You know, why should white people be ashamed to have a sense of racial solidarity when every other organization, every other race is not only allowed but encouraged to have a strong sense of racial solidarity?
No one recoils when NAACP is mentioned, nor should we, because we seek to safeguard our family's interests first. We've got to take a break. First break of the night. We get back. Me and Keith are going to power drive the news, folks. Stay tuned.
We fought, we learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. That number again, 801-216-4816.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. James Edwards from Nashville tonight, as mentioned, having attended and participated in the Council of Conservative Citizens Board of Directors meeting. I've been privileged to serve on the board since... quite a few years now. Great people here that love God and love life, certainly not filled with any motivated 0% by hatred, but nothing but a righteous love of their people and their sole efforts, of course, to defend and safeguard our cultural heritage that's unique to us, as everyone should be doing. Keith Alexander with us tonight, but we're both out of the studio. And Keith, let's get down to news. You know, it's been a off-kilter couple of weeks here for the program in terms of just our standard fare, me and you in the studio for the first couple of hours at minimum with guests, and then Eddie comes in, and we've had the birthday show, which was a special event. You've been out, and then tonight we're on the road, but we're getting back on an even keel. Great article, Keith, at WorldNet Daily, who, again, just another one of the organizations that is coming around to report on the facts. And, you know, I think that's all that we do. People can are certainly free to disagree with us, but don't call us names just because we talk about facts dispassionately. And Colin Flaherty, of course, a superstar when it comes to black violence and crime, he has an article for WorldNet Daily entitled "Newspapers Directed to Cover Up Black Violence." Now, that's, of course, no surprise to any of us. Everyone knows that the media goes out of its way to conceal the race of the perpetrator in many instances, but Colin has proof and names names. But before we get to that story, I want to circle back to another manifestation of black violence, and it happened again at Chuck E. Cheese. Now, the political cesspool has somewhat of a reputation for reporting on black violence at Chuck E. Cheese, and there's just something about Chuck E. Cheese and minorities that doesn't seem to mesh well.
Now, you well, bring out the worst in them.
I don't know what it is, but if you do a Google search for black crime Chuck E. Cheese, you're just going to get overwhelmed. Now, getting back to Colin's article, the article about the latest incident at Chuck E. Cheese did not mention the race of the perpetrators, but I want everybody to listen to me as I read this report out of Chicago. It came on the Fox affiliate in Chicago, tell me if you can kind of connect the dots here and figure it out for yourself. The story reads, two people were arrested and three people were injured after a fight Sunday at Chuck E. Cheese restaurant in Lincoln Park. The fight occurred at 7:10 p.m. when a man pushed a pregnant woman up at the counter as she was trying to redeem tickets for a prize. Three adults suffered minor injuries, but no one was hospitalized. Shambria Barfield was charged with a misdemeanor count of battery. Travell Washington, he's 21 years old, Keith, was charged with two misdemeanor counts of battery. And Zaini Washington was also charged, as the three perpetrators were attending a birthday party for Travell's six-year-old daughter. So here's our clues. The story, of course, doesn't mention the race, but you've got Shambria, Travell, and Zahini. Travell is 21 and has a six-year-old daughter. So if you just had to take a wild stab in the dark at the ethnicity of those involved, what would you say, Keith?
Black is midnight. That's exactly what we've got here. And, you know, I've always been puzzled by this connection between Chuck E. Cheese and black violence. It's like the combination of cheese, children's birthday parties, and beer brings out the very worst in the black race. I don't know. It's almost laughable how adults can wind up getting into brawls so often at a children's party venue, basically, which is what Chuck E. Cheese is. I remember when my kids were young, we used to go to Chuck E. Cheese. People used to use Chuck E. Cheese as a venue for having birthday parties for their kids. But, you know, by the time my oldest kid was, you know, getting out of the birthday party realm, you know, maybe 7 or 8, Chuck E. Cheese was already in eclipse among white people. And this is the reason why. Again, just like Grandma used to say, you can dress them up, but you can't take them to town. And, you know, I really would like to see some sociology department at some prestigious American university look into this question to find out what confluence of factors causes Chuck E. Cheese to be the epicenter of black violence in America.
And I just want to give people more of a sampling of what we're talking about. This is not just a handful of cases. It is dozens of cases of black violence at Chuck E. Cheese. And you can go and you can read all of these articles, and you got to be wondering what in the world is going on at Chuck E. Cheese, and that these reports deliberately avoid even mentioning the elephant in the room, which, of course, is race. There's been a lot of articles written on the trend, as I write about in a blog entry at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week. One of them, Keith, appeared at the Wall Street Journal, and like all of the others, it didn't point out the vast majority of these cases of violence at Chuck E. Cheese involved blacks, but it did link to a police report for a couple of the incidents. And here's some pertinent info. This one first from a responding police officer in Flint, Michigan. He writes, I exited my vehicle, this is the officer writing, and entered into the Chuck E. Cheese restaurant where I observed approximately 75 to 85 black males and females fighting in the restaurant. From another police report in Brookfield, Wisconsin, the officer writes, I made contact with the manager and inquired which people were causing the problem. He directed me to two large groups of male and female African-American people. So this is the police report. You would think that would probably be an interesting and important fact to include in a news article, but as Colin Flaherty writes, newspapers have now been directed, of course, we know that they always did it, but it's actually a mandate that they purposefully do not mention the race of black and exclusively black perpetrators.
Well, you know, James, I think it goes back to that landmark anthropological work by the so-called, modern anthropologist Ashley Montague, whose real name is Israel Ehrenrig, back in 1944-45, called Race, Mankind's Most Enduring Myth, I believe it is. Race is supposed to not exist. And if it exists, it's totally inconsequential. And the left believes this so fervently that they insist upon disguising race when everyone with a grain of common sense to their makeup realizes that race is, one, real, and two, vitally important, and three, a very predictive factor in human behavior. So the left basically hides its head in the sand. It's like the emperor's new clothes, you know, and when some group like the political cesspool comes by and points out that the emperor has no clothes, that indeed race is important, everybody immediately gets it. And that everybody includes Warren Net Daily and Colin Flaherty. You know, go ahead.
I was just going to say more and more people are beginning to report the truth, Keith, because as Colin Flaherty recently said on Alex Jones, he appeared on Alex after he appeared on our show and with Sam Bushman as well, it's not, you know, his job is not to figure out why this occurs, just to report the facts. And that's, I think, what we do. And people would say, oh, my God, did you hear that racist rant by James and Keith? They were talking about how blacks commit crime at Chuck E. Cheese. As John Rocker recently wrote for WorldNet Daily, what kind of a kindergarten IQ of a country do we have where it's racist to point out facts? You know, if I was a black leader or a leader in the black community, I wouldn't be trying to smear the truth tellers. I would be trying to talk to members of my own community and say, listen, guys, we got, you know, enough with the excuses. We need to be responsible for our own behavior. They're not racist because they point out the truth. This is something that we need to use to better ourselves, but rather, that's, of course, the last thing they do. They just try to cash.
Well, you know, there are black celebrities that do this, James, like Bill Cosby, and, of course, they're roundly criticized for doing it and marginalized.
Well, we're going to come back.
Oh,
you're exactly right, Keith. Absolutely right. We're going to come back and look into that article about Flaherty in a little bit more detail. Stay tuned, folks.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, everybody. We're spending a little bit of time this hour talking about forced black violence, the way the press covers it up. And I was talking with Sam Bushman off the air during the last commercial break, and he shared with me that even Glenn Beck now is beginning to provide coverage of the black violence as it occurs at Chuck E. Cheese. And, you know, I want you to think about this. To give the political cesspool sole credit for these big-time talkers beginning to, test the waters on this issue for themselves, to give us sole credit for that is to give us too much credit. I don't know if Glenn Beck's listening to the cesspool and getting talking points or good show ideas. You're probably not. But I do think that we have had some sort of an impact on these people. If Glenn Beck himself is not listening, perhaps some of his handlers are. And certainly we have contacts with WorldNet Daily, and we've worked with them on a couple of different occasions. And it's really encouraging. You know, it's not inconceivable in the least to believe that some of these organizations and some of these entities have said, hey, you know, there's that radio show. It's completely legit. It's on AM radio stations. They talk about this stuff. It's their signature issue, and they have not only been able to survive it, but by any standard of measurement, grow and continue to thrive without having to apologize or recant for their commentary. And I do truly believe that we have had a hand, the extent to which can be debated, but we have had a hand in some of these other media outlets beginning to get on the bandwagon and talk about these issues of a racial animus in clear and concise terms. But I want to go back to the article that we were referencing from Colin Flaherty for WorldNet Daily, newspapers directed to cover up black crime. And here's what he writes. I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs in and toss it to Keith. Of course, Colin Flaherty was a guest on our show a few weeks ago. When a mom and daughter were kidnapped, forced to withdraw money from an ATM, raped, then shot last week, the Indianapolis Star played the book, did not mention that the suspects are black. The book in this case is written by the Society of Professional Journalists, headquartered just 3 miles from the scene of the crime. Colin Flaherty continues, in last month's issue of the Society of Professional Journalists, the oldest and largest organization of journalists in America, reminded its members that they should report how they should report racial violence. Don't do it. The SPJ story was just repeating what dozens of chapters around the country have been telling its members in regular seminars. Unless someone is considered enough to wave around a sign saying kill honky or issue a press release and utter racial expletives in front of lots of witnesses, the fact that the suspects just happen to be black has no bearing at all on the story. And if you wonder about it, you are probably just a racist and a hater. So, Keith, this comes, according to Colin Flaherty's research, directly from the Society of Professional Journalism, an organization that's kind of an overseer of journalistic etiquette. Don't mention it. If you do, you are the racist.
Well, you know, it's sad but undoubtedly true that there has been a great debasement in the professionalism of journalists and the journalism profession generally over the past 60 or 70 years. They have become, in effect, the propaganda wing of the left. They are exclusively populated by leftists. The fact that we're here on the margins basically doing this radio program for free while no-talent bums like Chris Wallace, Mike Wallace, the people on CBS, NBC, ABC make millions of dollars a year giving liberal claptrap and lies to people shows you that there is no principle involved in journalism now except to toe the line for the left. Now, the local newspaper here in Memphis used to have a byline and a motto which was, give light and the people will find their own way. The reason that journalists and the Society of Journalists now recommends, in fact, enforces upon its members the fact that they are not to mention the race of criminal perpetrators shows that they don't trust people to find their own way. In fact, they insist they follow the path that the left sets for them. These are totalitarian principles. These are the new totalitarians that are, you know, disguised as liberals, described as free thinkers. They're anything but free thinkers. They are thought controllers, and they are taking over our lives and our society, and they're doing it because the younger generation basically isn't founded anymore on common sense. They're not grounded in common sense the way that you were and I was when we were growing up, James. And they believe this malarkey that they get from the left, and all of the institutions of society now tend to support this leftist version of reality, which is the antithesis of reality. You know, we have talked about this on our program for, you know, almost a decade now, and it seems to be getting worse with every passing year. We know that the old counterculture of the 50s and 60s is now the establishment in America, and the old establishment, the establishment that basically was founded upon devotion to principle and principled inquiry, is now the dissident culture. We're part of the dissident culture. It's like Sam Francis said, you're not really conservative anymore, because what is there left to conserve? We are what he termed middle American radicals, because we believe in true diversity of thought and freedom of expression and the freedom to seek the truth and follow that thread wherever it goes. That is totally out of fashion now in our colleges, universities, and in all aspects of the journalistic profession.
And, you know, what's interesting, Keith, great commentary, by the way. What's interesting, Keith, is that Colin Flaherty comes back in his article to mention that these journalists, the same ones that take their marching order from the Society of Professional Journalists, very regularly mention race. In these same papers every day, Colin writes that they run stories about black caucuses, black churches, black colleges, black television stations, black expos, black radio shows, black newspapers, black blogs, and so on, almost always in a positive light. But when it comes to black mob violence, race is a social construct.
Well, the silence is deafening, as they say. And I'm looking right now at Section B of today's Commercial Appeal, the daily newspaper in Memphis, the business section, for Saturday, November the 9th, and it has as its lead article, Great Inroads, Award Ceremony Honors Achievements by Minority and Women-Owned Companies. And it goes on about all the special promotional efforts that are made to shoehorn blacks and women into business and to sustain their entrepreneurial enterprises, their startup companies and whatnot. These are resources that are totally unavailable to you or me if we wanted to start a business. And we're supposed to, you know, it's like there is a conspiracy. By hook or crook, they're going to promote non-whites, and all whites are going to be cast to the back of the bus. So much for this claptrap that we hear from people like Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, and other so-called conservatives, to the effect that Martin Luther King's great dream was that his children would be judged not by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. They insist upon being judged and being given preferences based upon the color of their skin. And to heck with the content of anybody's character. We need to realize the deck is stacked against us and our children. And if we want to have a place at the table, if we want fair play, we're going to have to get the same type of sense of racial solidarity that blacks, Hispanics, Asians, Jews, every other group has, and we're going to have to unashamedly promote those interests in the legislature, in government, in the public forum, in every regard, because if we don't, we've brought, in essence, a knife to a gunfight, and we're going to lose. And they do not, this scares the left more than anything else, the awakening of a white racial consciousness among white people, not only in America, but worldwide. Their primary weapon to beat it back is the so-called idea or notion of white privilege, that somehow being a white Gentile gives you massive benefits. Now, they're not saying being a Jew gives you massive benefits, which it obviously does. It does not say that being black gives you massive benefits, which it does. Just read the Code of Federal Regulations. Look at the admissions policies of selective colleges, universities, graduate schools, medical schools, law schools. You can see that being black is solid gold, and being white is worse than nothing, okay? In fact, you are a target for discrimination if you're white. When are people
Steve,
going to
take a break, brother. Hold on right there.
Don't this is
roll.
What's going on.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Which do you love best, Thanksgiving dinner or leftovers? The meal takes such time and effort, you wish it was easier so you could have it more often. Well, right now it is, right now you can. Imagine your family enjoying the ultimate comfort food easily during stressed out times of a disaster or emergency, or outdoors while camping or hiking. The freeze-dried feast from Freeze Dry Guy is a special case of Thanksgiving dinner, ready for you any day of the year for at least 25 years. Freeze-dried turkey tetrazzini, green beans, dehydrated potatoes and sweet potatoes, yes, even dessert. This delicious feast is ready to eat when you want or need it most, easily in just minutes. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD. There's free shipping, plus your family could win a free traditional Thanksgiving dinner. Go now to freezedryguy.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, we're about to have a free-for-all here on the radio. We got Peter Scoop Stanton called in also via telephone. So while our flagship to the studio in Memphis is dark tonight, Keith calling in, I'm calling in, Scoop calling in, Sam Bushman's quarterbacking all this via the network studio in Utah. We're going to see, it's going to be like a Royal Rumble here with three phone lines connected at once. Normally, it's Keith and I on the mics at the studio. Let's see how this goes. But
I know Scoop Stanton's ears have to just be popping because every week, almost without fail, I get a text message from Scoop saying, I'm at Chuck's, back at Chuck's. You never guess where I am. I'm at Chuck's. This guy has an annual pass to Chuck E. Cheese, and he wears it out. So, Scoop, have you ever witnessed anything? You've probably never been in the middle of a brawl at Chuck E. Cheese. At least I'm hoping you haven't. But have you witnessed any tremors of the sort of behavior we've been talking about tonight?
No, James. However, the children that attend the local Chuck E. Cheese in my neighborhood, they just act hog wild. My daughter, who's 3 years old, likes to take the tokens and play the crappy video games and whatnot. And the kids will literally take the tokens out of her little cup or take her tickets or try to play the game. My daughter had a birthday last week. Of course, we're at Chuck E. Cheese to my disappointment, and the kids were coming over to our table who were not invited. So my wife and I had to tell them to scram.
Well, I'll tell you this, folks. Sam has uncovered an ABC news report that offers every reason for the phenomenon that occurs at Chuck E. Cheese, except for the most logical conclusion. They don't draw that one. We're going to play that a little later on in the show. We're going to depart from Chuck E. Cheese commentary tonight and go to Scoop, who has a couple of items to bring to the table, including Terry McAuliffe's election and Scoop's state of Virginia. So what do you got for us on that front?
Well, as you all know, the media honed on Virginia against the governor's race between Terry McAuliffe, who is a Washington insider and just an absolute scoundrel, and Ken Cuccinelli, who's a very patriotic right-of-center attorney general for the Commonwealth. Then, if you go online and look at the map of who voted for who, you would see that McAuliffe won Hampton Roads, except for City of Virginia Beach, City of Richmond and Henrico County, which in both of those districts are heavily majority and heavily Democratic. And, of course, Northern Virginia. Unlike the rest of the Commonwealth, Northern Virginia has nothing in common with the Commonwealth of Virginia. Most of the people that live in Northern Virginia are interlopers from New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Illinois, and Michigan. And these people come down, move into Virginia, and work for the federal government, and they bring their liberalism with them. They vote Democrat all their life, and their parents voted Democrat until all the jobs in their home state went away, so they come down to D.C. to screw up the rest of the nation. And these people, they don't like open carry, they don't like low taxes, they don't like law and order, they don't like the death penalty, yet they live in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And these people are absolutely crazy, and I absolutely hate them. I like to make the joke that I like the laid-back, down-to-earth, hard-working people of the Upper West Side of Manhattan Island.
Well, let me say this, Peter, if I could. This is Keith Alexander. This is a common phenomenon that happened to Colorado. You had expatriates from California that were fleeing the overtaxation they were encountering in California, but they forgot to leave their liberalism behind along with their aversion to taxes in California. They brought their aversion to taxes, but they apparently don't have enough common sense to realize that it was their political inclinations that made California uninhabitable and caused them to go to Colorado. We have a community in North Carolina, which also is a destination for a lot of blue state expatriates. There's a town called Cary, North Carolina, and the locals joke that Cary stands for Containment Area for Relocated Yankees. Same thing for Florida. Okay? Now, what can we do about these people? How can we see, they are so benighted and so brainwashed by the news media, by academia, by all of the institutions in our society to believe that liberalism is good, that they can't realize that what they're fleeing is, in essence, the very predictable fruits of having a liberal government and a liberal politicians. So we want to hear you as a man on the front lines there in the D.C. area. What's the solution to this Gordian knot, Peter? How can we get these people to wake up and smell the coffee?
Well, I really don't know how to get these people to wake up, but unlike like most of these people that can't afford to live in this area, I'm looking to move to smaller towns where the people are laid back and they vote Republican or vote right of center, and they don't put up with the nonsense coming from New York City, Philadelphia, Boston, or any other of these Ivy League cities.
But well, what do they say? They say the gubernatorial race. Peter.
Yes.
Peter, I was going to say, we have a saying down here in the South, you can run, but you can't hide. You know, we've been moving one exit further down the expressway for years here in the South, trying to get away from the contamination of liberalism that seems to center in urban areas, trying to get away from this. But, you know, with the proposed or the predicted demographic change in America, by the year 2041, white people will be a minority, less than 50% in America. Where are we going to run to? We're going to have to stand and turn and fight at some point, or else, you know, we're going to run out of places to flee to.
You know, that's a quote in Gone with the Wind, I think, when the Confederates are retreating. I guess it's from Atlanta, and they're looking out on the forts, and I think the quote is something along the lines, you know, one day they will turn and fight again, and when they do, I'll be there to stand with them. And, you know, a lot can be said for that, and that's why a lot of talk about secession is beginning to reemerge, and you're
right,
beginning to hear the rumblings of secession. It's just like in Colorado. I mean, the hardy stock of the state of Colorado have nothing in common with the liberal bastion of Denver, and the same can be said for Oregon. I mean, the state of Oregon, you know, the rough and tumble, hardy folks of Oregon,
lumberjacks.
Really, yeah, the lumberjacks of Oregon, they it's Portland. As much as I love the Trailblazers, it's Portland that brings down Oregon. And a lot, you know, that can be said across the country, and indeed the nation. You know, you look at the square miles won by Romney, and I'm, of course, no fan of the respectable conservative Republicans like Romney, but you look at the amount of the square miles and landmass won by Romney versus the pinpricks won by Obama, and he was enough to carry the election if you believe in that the votes are tallied properly, and there's, you know, a lot of questions to be had for that. But nevertheless, you know, the majority of America is still with us, but it's just they reached a critical mass.
You know, James, let me interject here just a moment. James, this is the importance of the Supreme Court case of Baker versus Carr, which only law students know about now, that supposedly enshrined in American law the one man, one vote principle. Well, one man, one vote gave urban centers basically a veto power, or allowed them to totally disregard the viewpoint of our rural areas. It told every state that they cannot pattern their legislature after the federal legislature, in which you have senators, every state from Rhode Island to Alaska, the smallest to the largest, have the same number of senators. And you could not do that on a state legislative basis. And Baker versus Carr and all of the enforcement of Baker versus Carr that has happened since that decision came down in 1962 has basically made rural America totally under the thumb of urban interests, which is the way that the left intended it to be. People need to track problem that we're talking about right now directly back to that Supreme Court decision. That's where all of the problems basically started. That's where the left gained its traction, and that's why we're ruled by pinpricks, geographic pinpricks in America now, as you just mentioned.
Folks, if you ever want to know the underlying cause or the root problem of a certain disease, Keith can Dr. Alexander can diagnose it, politically speaking. And I apologize for our connection. You know, obviously the audio quality isn't nearly as good as it would be if we were in the studio tonight with us all converging via telephone to make this show happen this evening so we can be live without having to play a tape. We'll be back in the studio. That's why we drive to the studio every Saturday night, to give you that crystal clear digital audio quality. But Scoop, we've had the seconds remaining this hour. Keith and I will be back for the rest of you in the second hour. A final word from you, Scoop, before your time runs out.
Yes, next week, stand by for Scoop Stanton's review of Lee Daniels' The Butler. You don't want to miss it.
So you went to go see The Butler. You paid money to watch The Butler.
I didn't pay money, but I'm not going to say anything over the air that's going to have the NSA knocking on my door. But I did watch it, and I put it this way. I give it 3 preciouses.
The Butler, of course, how the black butler at the White House influenced the country and turned the rudder based upon his influences on a plethora of American presidents and how righteous he was.
Another left-wing fantasy brought to life by Hollywood.
We're going to take a break, folks. Thank you, Scoop, for your contributions tonight. Stay tuned, everybody. Keith Alexander and yours truly, James Edwards, back with you in the second hour.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.